I'm Blake Hardcastle. This is the Stories You've Missed podcast. Hello and welcome to the podcast Stories You've Missed. These are accounts of God's grace in the lives of ordinary people at Grand Parkway Baptist Church. My guests today are Al and Nancy Williams, and Al is from Waco, Texas, and he worked for Texas Instruments. He's a graduate of A&M and loves all things Aggie, especially Aggie sports. Mm-hmm. He's been married to Nancy for over 38 years, almost 39 years. Mm-hmm. When is your anniversary?
December 30th.
There we go.
Just for the record, I know it.
December 30th, and almost 39 years. Nancy works at an Ohio Genist and enjoys the beach, artsy stuff, sewing. And you have two adult children and one grandchild. And please tell me that you guys met when Nancy was a hygienist working on your teeth.
It was pretty close.
Okay. Well, thank you, Al and Nancy. They're here today to talk about God's grace, how they've experienced God's grace in almost four decades of marriage. Mm-hmm. All right. So, Al and Nancy, tell us, how did you guys meet?
Well, I was actually not officially a dental hygienist yet. I was in dental hygiene school.
Okay.
In the medical
Al was
center.
Cheap, maybe, trying to get cheap dental
there
care?
There you go. You are onto something here. You must know me pretty well.
If she tells the story
frugal,
correctly.
Frugal. Good steward.
If she tells the story correctly, you'll get a kick out of this.
So I had I was going to school. I was supporting myself through that, driving a beat-up car, but I wrecked my car. And I was forced to join a van pool, which I really thought I was way too cool to be joining. But anyway, so I went and joined the van pool.
And a van pool for listeners is
it was a
like Uber.
Well, what you talk about again, how he connects us and stuff. I mean, I was backup driver to a van pool that went from Missouri City to the medical center.
A van pool is we're gonna
we
we're
got 15
carpool
people.
Together.
We have okay. 15 people, and I was so there was 13 women, and me and the primary driver, two men that drove the van.
And that may or may not have been the reason why you chose backup van driver as a as a side hustle.
No, okay. Nancy was not in the picture when I joined. That's okay. It. So it was a van pool, and so I thought I was too cool for school to be in a van, right, but I was driving down there paying a ton for parking. I said, this guy lives around the corner.
So it was an older version of a park and ride.
That's right. Okay, that's right. And we got to use the van on the weekend sometimes. So
Nancy's going to use the van pool.
I joined the van pool and. Al's the assistant driver.
Right. And so Nancy was, I had just joined and she was gone for a few days or hadn't started yet. And Tony was the primary driver. He was a PhD at MD Anderson and he was a good friend of mine. And I worked in the finance office there. But anyway, he said, hey, listen, I know you're not dating anybody or anything right now. He said, we got this young girl that is joined this van pool that you might be interested in. And I'll be honest, this may come across crudely, but I said, and I looked around, I said, Tony, look at the back here in his van. It's just, you think, I don't think so. I don't think this is going to be my spot. And I don't think I'm going to find my future or anything here. And
she's in the van pool.
She's
not
on the van. That's
right.
She hadn't shown up yet. So the next thing I know about as soon as I get this, it was a little bit rude. I didn't mean it. They would all be young to me now. All the people would be young to me now. But she pulls up. And this old beat up green Datsun, and the door is beat up, so she has to crawl out the passenger side. And I said,
yeah.
Oh,
when you
got
to crawl the passenger side, you need a
yeah.
van pool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I said, Tony, you might be onto something here. So that was like in January of 1981.
You heard music. The sun
well,
went
no,
to the clouds
no,
at a certain
no,
angle.
There was no harps yet. Okay. Nothing like that. But I said, Tony, you may be onto something here. Sort of tongue in cheek. Because I hadn't even said a word to her yet. Yeah. Anyway, so she joins the van pool. So here we are, two young people. She's 24. I'm 26. And probably the average age after that is probably 59.
Okay. Oh.
That was the reference I was making. It was an older bunch.
Okay.
A very older bunch. And so here we are, 26 and 24. So that's how we met. We met on van pool number 29 of the Texas Medical Center. Nancy's birthday is October 29. Mine's December 29. So kind of our favorite number is 29, which is a weird favorite number.
And so lottery tickets, you always pick 29. I'm kidding. So now, Nancy, you're not in the van pool to meet anybody.
Right. No, I'm just trying to survive.
And you're
at this
thinking,
point.
Any van pool driver, this is not some
right. Yes,
option.
Right. And so then I said, so one day, well, I'm just kind of doing my own thing, just trying to get through school. And I said, if anyone needs their teeth cleaned, I need patients.
Yeah.
And Al said, I need my teeth cleaned.
How often did he come get his teeth cleaned?
Well,
as often as she would invite me. As a matter of fact, I think I was there. I think I went to my dentist about 2 weeks before I went to see her, but I wasn't going to tell her that.
Yeah. I was pretty impressed with how clean his teeth.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually a good move on your part.
Yeah. That's how you check horses out, though. I'm a little offended by that, but anyway.
So that's kind of initially how we got conversation going. Was during the cleaning, because you have time to talk to somebody and kind of get to know them.
So right.
That was kind of the deal.
And at what point, how did you know this was heading towards marriage?
Well, we got off to just a slow start.
Slow is a euphemism for rocky. no, I shouldn't say. Let me pick up. It was clear to me early on that Nancy had somebody in her life. I didn't know how serious or whatever, but I think they were dating and stuff like
that.
But
he must not have had a car or didn't know how to give her a...
I'm
just teasing.
No,
but we were dating other people.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I didn't have anybody else to date, but she did. So just to give a quick summary, we met in January of 1981, and we were married by December 30th of 1981.
So for all non-math majors,
that is less than 1 year. From the time we laid eyes on each other, we were married within 1 year. Now, for a guy like me, a finance guy that is a conservative thinker, that was like off the charts fast.
Okay.
Now, let me just intercede it now because I want to just get this out of the way. We'll get to when we decided to get married, but we decided 3 weeks before the end of the year because we had already decided we wanted to live our life together for the rest of our lives. We wanted to get married, but our Christianity would not allow us to live together to go do this. So we just felt like, well, she's going to graduate in the subsequent June. I said, let's just get married before that. It wasn't a very romantic thing. Okay. It was kind of a conversation.
Was it a tax break, Nancy?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
It was a tax break.
I was a poor college
and
student.
I was working, making money. And I cannot tell you how much money it saved us on taxes by getting married before the end of the year. So
just give me a yes or no. Your parents thought this was a great idea.
Our parents were not greatly involved in
independent.
We were pretty independent.
At that point, they're like, hey, just...
I had been living on my own for a number of years.
Right, so I had to get that in. So you see, now you got the whole duration of how long it took, but it was. But I wanted to get to that. But before we got there, it took us not until about the summer because I was asking her out, and every night I'd get a weekday thing, but I was clearly not the weekend guy.
Oh,
it was clear to me that I was not the weekend guy. So
is before social media and Instagram and TikTok. Yes. You just got to feel your way on a phone. Okay, yeah, gotcha.
So and I respected that. I mean, I'm kidding, sort of. But she had a relationship, and so it finally got to the point, kind of in the summer of '81. I kind of was sort of being tired of the weekday guy, you know. And so in my mind and my heart, I had made my last phone call for anything. So I said, okay, that's fine. I mean, this is not the will of God. I mean, whatever. I'm just moving on. I'm emotionally, I was kind of ready to remove from thinking about pursuing any more relationship with Nancy. Then, I don't know, within a few days or whatever, she calls me, which was unusual. That was back when we had, you know, we did it like that. The guys usually made the calls.
Mm-hmm.
And she calls me and said, hey, would you like to have coffee? I think it was coffee or something, or lunch at the medical center. And I said, yeah, I think that'd be good. So that's actually the beginning of when we really started to move forward.
Yeah.
And so that was probably, it was in the summer of 81. So anyway, so then I kind of worked my way to weekends. Okay. So... you got anything that you want to add to that or correct?
I really don't know how to follow that, really. I mean, Well, I don't think we've got enough time to really justify, like, you've painted.
No, I'm not painting a poor picture of you. I mean, I think that I was being a little too tenacious, and you had some things going.
I was trying to deal with things in my life.
Yeah, and, right.
So, I had a lot on my plate.
Yeah, so.
You got a Datsun that's only got a working passenger door.
Right.
Yes. That's right. So this is not any knock on Nancy.
Mode.
That's right.
Okay. Anyway, so that's kind of it. So. The question I think you ask is...
How did you know God was moving you toward a life together? Yeah, I think sometimes some of our listeners might be trying to walk through some of these similar waters, and how do I know this is the person? How do I know, you know, do I go to a van pool? Where can I find one of those? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. How did you know?
Well, for me, I did not want to be apart from her any. Mm. So, I mean, I wanted to be with her. At the time, I was 26.
And we're not saying codependent.
Like,
I can't live without her.
No, not like that. No, I had owned a home already. I was working. I was apart with my brother, but I was living in the home that I owned half of, and I was fairly independent. But I was, we had. I'm going to use the L word here in a minute. Love. Okay. I believed that I loved her.
Yeah.
And we've had good conversation about love. At the beginning, and what does it look like throughout your relationship, and is it agape, eros, all that stuff. But I knew that I didn't want to be apart from her.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of when I started to believe. Now, this was in the summer. Didn't know that marriage was going to be in December.
Right.
But I just felt like that God was, I'd never felt that way about anybody.
Okay.
And I had other friends before that and never had felt that way about anybody.
Nancy, how did you know?
Well, once we finally started dating, I was crazy about him.
Oh,
and okay. so the thing was, is he really kind of like my what do you call it? I could check the boxes, like mm-hmm. as far as
yeah.
And but the main thing, well, I mean, I enjoyed his company, and he made me laugh, and you know, we had good conversations and all that. But he was a Christian, and that was like number one
right.
on my list.
That was a make or break.
And I knew that I needed to marry someone who we were equally yoked.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and the fact that he was a devout Christian and it was really in his heart, I could tell. Mm-hmm. I could tell it just wasn't words he was saying just to please me.
Yeah.
But that was where I was ready to keep it moving forward and, you know, and believing that it might be something real.
And I felt the same way with her. I mean, I knew she was a Christian. She was going to church. Actually, at that time, I was pretty hit and miss. But she was faithfully going to, as a 24-year-old, driving downtown to the First Methodist Church of downtown Houston. And I knew she was a Christian. So that was a big part of it. Because other relationships I'd never really considered
And so you've been married almost 39 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know... You know, you think about all that you've experienced, or even part of what you've experienced. Mm-hmm. If you had to navigate that not as a believer, or with one of you not as a believer, is that, you know, even fathomable to you? How would you have done that?
Is a great question. I'm looking at 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 14. Do not be bound together with unbelievers, for what partnership have righteousness and lawlessness, or what fellowship has light with darkness? I thought about that as we were preparing to have this conversation. I can't even imagine a relationship where we were unbelievers or being yoked with an unbeliever. I just through the things that we've already sort of shared with our story on adoption and other things. I can't imagine having that journey and that partnership with a non-believer. Yeah. I don't know how I would even approach it.
And so someone listening who, you know, single, but maybe they're dating or exploring dating and they're like, well, you know, this person, so many boxes are checked, either this one not checked, or maybe it's not checked real, real dark ink. Maybe it's just pencil. What would you say to that person?
I would say wait on the Lord on it. I think you need to go into it 100% because once you're in marriage, you're in marriage. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess you can get out of it, but that's not God's way. and his plan. And so I just wait on it and just pray about it. And I think if the Lord is in that, he's going to confirm it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my thinking. He's going to put that on your heart. Yeah. And you're going to know it.
What I might say, and what I would say, is that if you're going to go into it thinking, let's take if the woman is a believer and the man's not, I would not ever recommend. Well, if you think you're going to go in and change him pretty quickly or whatever, I think I'd be very cautious. Yeah,
you don't
want
to operate like a baseball scout.
No,
where you're looking at
be very cautious
potential,
with that.
Mm-hmm. Right?
You need to get that squared away before you enter into the covenant of marriage.
Yeah. And you know, I think about a single person who might be listening and they desire what you described. I want there to be someone who, man, I can't stop thinking about her. Mm-hmm. I think about him and I hear music, you know, mm-hmm. but this isn't happening yet. Yeah, what would you say to encourage that person?
Yeah, I really did feel that right before I met Al, and I had dated. I was dating and other people, but I really never felt like I had really had that connection with a person.
And you, at some point, doubt, maybe I never will.
Yes, absolutely. I remember telling you, you probably don't remember that, but when we were dating, I just remember saying, you know, I don't really think marriage is really necessarily for me because I just have never, and that's when we were still friends before we actually started dating. But I really, really felt that maybe it's not for me. Mm-hmm. But then it hit me. And, you know, there's been no turning back since.
Well, honestly, when I met her on that vanpool, I was kind of at a point where I had emotionally, I was sort of like, I ain't looking. And it may be a while, but I'm going to go on it wasn't a full court press on my, it just wasn't. And so, but so we kind of, both of us were sort of in that mode. So I'd say, don't push something that's not working. Now just wait, be patient and walk it. It's the timing is different for everybody. And it's God's will.
And it needs to be God's will completely and his plan, because marriage is very difficult. It can be, you know, there can be great things about it, but I mean, even early on, we kind of hit a bump, you know, cause we got married so quickly that, right after the honeymoon, we both were kind of like we got cold feet after the fact, you might say.
That is a true statement. We got back from our honeymoon and we both kind of looked at each other
like, oh, we
said, what have we done?
What have we done?
Yeah. And it was kind of, it's kind of weird that we both felt that way at the same time, but it was sort of fleeting. We kind of worked through it, talked through it.
Yeah.
And now what she's referring to, the rocky beginning, real quick, in 10 seconds or less, I was a softball junkie. I played all over, everywhere, traveled. And I just thought that was normal, that I'd play 100 games a year and be out of town a lot of times. I just thought that was normal life. But I learned that was a little selfish. And I, looking back on, I can't believe she put up with it. But that was probably our toughest year, the first year.
Yeah. You know, I think people, when I tell couples who are moving toward marriage, you're going to have one wedding and thousands of funerals where you die. That's to your right. selfishness. And you know, my experience, like most people, is I didn't realize how selfish I was until I got married.
Right.
And then it went to a whole nother level when we got kids where, what would you say to a couple who may be listening and they're going to get married within the next 12 months? You know, they've dated, they took longer than you guys did and they figured it out. And, you know, they know what they're getting themselves into.
I don't think you ever really know what you're getting yourself into until you just start doing life together and when it becomes permanent, when it becomes, I mean, more permanent, where it becomes marriage, where you're in it and where there's no like getting out of it easily.
Yeah.
And it kind of changes the dynamics a little bit. Not, I don't want to use the word trapped, but I mean, it just makes you feel a little bit more like there's the boundaries are definitely there. But I would just say communication is so important. Just keep talking. Keep talking. I know so many couples who they quit talking. They just quit, you know, through the years. The years go on and they just kind of get so used to each other. They get, you know, kind of bored with each other. But just be, you know, a friend to the person and just keep talking and be a good partner and keep praying. Pray together all the time.
you know, be faithful every day. I think of, you know, in the world we live in, people, we're always looking for that next big, you know, the high, and then we have these big lows. And mm-hmm. most marriage or life is, it's not the highs and the lows. It's mm-hmm. it's just the blocking and tackling every day. Mm-hmm. And so you just kind of just level it out and just be faithful each day and be thankful for every day. And you're going to have some awesome times, some real highs, but you're gonna have some lows. And my testimony has always been that the low point, not just necessarily with marriage, but in life, it is a believer. That's where the growth happens. It doesn't happen on the mountaintop. It happens in the valleys.
Say that again.
Well, I just think that the growth in a Christian life it happens in the valleys. You know, I kind of look at it as like where the green grass is and all, but you're down in the valley and not on the mountaintop. And so that's when self-sufficiency can kick in. And dangerous spot for a believer, a dangerous place to be. And so sometimes the lows can be something that you can that we can sharpen each other with, and it's a good thing. It's a growth period. Yeah. And so I think it's a lie that anybody would say that it's if it's not going great all the time, there must be something wrong with. I mean, God's using those valleys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but I think
and maybe even designing them.
Yes, absolutely, no question about it. And I can't remember. I was going to interject it when she mentioned something about no turning back. We use the term burning bridges. We say that. We usually say it in a negative sense. No, don't burn your bridge.
Right.
When it comes to marriage, I like the analogy of yes, you do burn the bridge. You enter in, you cross over, you enter into marriage, and I think for a lot of people, you need to burn the bridge, and not give yourself that out. Because it's been my observation, if you've ever talked to anybody, or if they kind of start thinking about the out, sometimes they'll take it. So I use the analogy, the bridge has been burned.
Yeah.
And so it's not an option anymore.
I think of a couple who, you know, maybe married 5-10 years. What advice do you have to them? Well, if you could say something back to you guys, year 8, what would you tell year 8 Al and Nancy?
I think I would. Complacency, I think, is a big problem in marriage, and just taking the other one for granted.
Hey, what does that look like when you say complacency?
Just not embracing really the
blessings that we have before us that we take for granted.
Yes.
Does that sometimes happen when kids come around, or your focus is on raising kids?
Yes.
Or dogs, or
you know, or career, or farm.
Your focus can get taken off of the marriage and off of God's center of the marriage. It can by so many things and houses.
Our primary relationship is each other more than our children, than our grandchildren, than our dog, all that stuff. So I mean, that's we have to remind ourselves all the time that that's the primary. That's the one that needs to be nurtured and healthy. Yeah. For all the rest of it to be healthy.
Yeah.
And I was going to make a point about, and you sort of mentioned it a few minutes ago. Marriage, especially married as long as we have, I mean, in life in general, you have all kinds of decision points. You have all kinds of things that come. You may make it here, you know, you make it to this level. Then you got 2 kids or 3 kids. Then you got college. Every one of them, there's landmines in marriage everywhere. I mean, they just are. And so it's how you approach them. And if you, again, it's like a ball team. You need to be prepared for the game. I don't want to call it a game, but you have to be prepared mentally and emotionally to address the things that can happen. So that when they do come up, whatever it might be that you've already sort of mentally prepared and emotionally and spiritually prepared for it. Because I used to wonder, well, why does somebody divorce it when they've been married 45 years or maybe when their kids just graduated college? And now as I've gotten older, I can see not that we should be doing that because that's not God's design.
Yeah.
But I see that somewhere one of the landmines got them. Mm-hmm. No, which one, but one of them got them.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And just keep talking. You know, just keep talking, keep communicating, because I just think people often in marriages just stop talking. They'll talk to their friends. They talk to other people. They don't necessarily communicate with each other.
Let me read a very, very familiar passage, and I'll apply it because I think most Christians will know this comes out of 1 Corinthians 13, the love chapter, which is about probably 90% of marriages, right, or weddings. But I'm just going to pick a few of the verses here and kind of explain and kind of relate this to perseverance. Love is patient. Love is kind, and it is not jealous. Love does not brag and is not arrogant. does not act unbecomingly, it does not seek its own, is not provoked, does not take into account a wrong suffered, does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. Having read that, we've been talking about love for the last two or three days, even in preparation for this, and you know, trying to define what is love. I mean, what, you know, Nancy gets a little upset with me sometimes when I say, "Well, love is a decision." Well, that sounds pretty sterile, okay? But I think love, above all,
you want to say love is math, and you want to say no, right. Love is music.
That's right. But above all, love is sacrificial, yeah. And I think that the biggest landmine for all of us is ourself. Mm-hmm. And you start, when you read through 1 Corinthians 13, you see if you can behave in the way that God has called us to behave, and you take your focus off yourself, mm-hmm. and put it on the other person,
yeah,
it sure goes a long ways, and because it just diffuses, because our self gets in our way big mm-hmm. time. And
that's,
so
that's great advice and wisdom for our listeners.
I think that's a biggie. So we just need to keep that in mind all the time.
Yeah. Nancy, any little nugget of wisdom to share? I see you prepared a bunch of notes.
No, I think Al's just about said it all.
Thunder Stealer.
No, I just think so often I just see people and talk to friends and whatever, but they will talk to their friends, you know, about mm-hmm. their feelings and about mm. this and about that,
yeah.
and have a very fluid conversation, long yeah. conversations, and then... and get with their spouse and
watch TV.
Yes. And yeah. really don't, and just, and don't go deep or whatever. And then, and I've been guilty of this. Like if somebody comes to the door, I greet them. Hey, how are you?
Throw a parade.
You
yeah.
know, very hospitable. Yeah. And then when Al wakes up in the morning, I'm like, hey, you know, so I've tried to kind of change that, because it's just kind of human nature, I think, to,
yeah.
you know, just to take the other one for granted.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. you know, I think your spouse or Al is a gift. I mean, it's just a gift from the Lord that mm-hmm. he brought us together. So we should, you know, and I do thank the Lord every day.
One error I make a lot is I brag about Nancy with other people more than I do to her.
Oh.
So, and we shouldn't brag probably, but you know, it's a yeah, healthy brag. Yeah. And sometimes I say, well, I need to tell her that yeah. more than I'm telling everybody else, you know.
You praise her.
Yeah.
Without her there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean it.
Yeah.
But she is awesome. She has been I tell you what, when you find a partner in life it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing.
When you can work well together.
That's right. And I would tell any man out there, listen to your wife. They got lots of good things to say. They got lots of good advice. I've said this probably for the last 30 years. I mean, almost our whole marriage, but the wives are strong. Women are stronger than men in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. And we need to give them the honor they deserve and what mm-hmm. God tells us to. I mean, we're to love yeah. them as Christ loves the church. You know, if we do that, things work pretty well.
I'm going to ask you something hard, which is to, how would you sum up your marriage advice or some part of it for a 9-year-old, for a 10-year-old, for a young person?
Mm-hmm.
How would you instruct them? Not that they're near marriage, but.
I think you just look for someone to live your life with, that God has got to be in the center. That's just mm-hmm. got to be the primary, number mm-hmm. one, main thing. And I would even go so far as to say, just don't date anyone unless they're a believer. I mean, it's just, yeah. it just seems like yeah. a waste of time.
Yeah.
And because if you don't have the Lord in the center, it's going to be a really tough road. And worship together, pray together, and that you're on the same team. This is mm-hmm. something that you're with your spouse, you're on the same team. So you need somebody that yeah. you know, one on your team is yeah. no going to be with you and fight for you. And
I've used an illustration this is a audio, not a video, but I've used the illustration. I learned this a long time ago. It's a very simple illustration. And I think a 9-year-old can, in terms of marriage, mm-hmm. you got a little triangle and you got God at the top of the triangle mm-hmm. and you got the husband and the wife.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as they're pursuing God and working, you know, and pursuing mm-hmm. it through prayer, through worship, through, mm-hmm. as they're continuing to do that, they're naturally drawn closer to one another.
As they get closer to him.
Yes.
The
as they
distance,
get closer to him, then they get closer to one another. So I've kind of used it. And I think that would be a useful beginning point for marriage with a young one. But I will. And I think this is one. I mean, if this is just your, if this is your basics right here. And when it comes to marriage, you can start teaching 9 year olds. And for this cause, a man shall leave his father and his mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. I think, you know, just teaching that this is serious business, and one man, one woman, biblical marriage, that's the only biblical marriage there is, and to teach that and respect that and to, you know, I wasn't very good at this growing up, but I think you should, in all relationships, you should, if you don't see them as a future husband or wife, move on.
Yeah. Well, I want to, Al, Nancy, I want to thank you for being here today. I feel like we could talk for a lot longer, and I also think I've got a little less TV and more talking in my future. So I've benefited from this, and I know our listeners have as well. I want to thank you for listening, and do us a solid, and go to wherever you listen to podcasts, and give us a review. And if you have suggestions for other stories or other marriages you want to hear from, contact me, Blake@grandparkway.org. This is The Stories You've Missed.